I'm going to start with a common shared experience. Physical therapy with Dina Kramer. How many of us have had physical therapy with Dina Kramer? I knew it would be a surprising number. When I was starting, I remember this very strongly at Kurt Peeler's, I think it was his mother's, Shiva Minyanim. When I was starting, I used to have a lot of neck problems, tension in my neck. I guess that was where I stored the anxiety of a new job. And I used to visit Dina Kramer very often. And one time I was with a friend who was in physical therapy school. And the difference was very interesting and telling. He could do all the things that Dina Kramer could do, but he did them without surety. He did them without confidence and calm and decisiveness. It was very indecisive as he did it. And it's not that he didn't know, it's that he hadn't practiced. He hadn't had the confidence to really come into his own in the role. That's what I think I want to talk to you about. Coming into one's own in whatever role you play in your life, mother, father, sister, brother, leader, physician, teacher. The imposter syndrome plagues us all. It's a very common, if not psychiatric diagnosis, a psychiatric understanding or psychologic understanding that we very rarely, I think it was in Hamlet or Lear, we feel as if we are dressed in borrowed robes. I think it's Macbeth, actually. That the identity we present to the world is not the real one that we feel internally. And thinking about Dina Kramer's comment, I'm led to a comment by one of the Apta Rebbes, one of Abraham Joshua Heschel's ancestors on this week's parasha. He talks about prayer. And he notes that people who raise their voice excessively in prayer, it seems to indicate a lack of faith, as if to say that God must be hard of hearing. That God is not the one in the High Holiday Liturgy who checks our innards. That God looks into our internal selves and that God needs us to promote and speak loudly of our prayers and requests and qualities. That's a kind of lack of faith. And that resonates with me. You know, when you have people who are recently come to religion, recently become Baal Tshuva, become more observant, or even people who are recently become Jewish, there's often an effort to demonstrate one's faith, to be more public about one's observance. And eventually as one, and I'm actually speaking of my own experience, you know, I used to wear tzitzit on the outside and used to make sure everyone could see the lines of my tefillin and was very strict and exacting about certain practices. And eventually it started to wear more naturally on me after, I don't know, 11 years, something like that. That's the trick, sort of coming to our own authentic understanding of ourselves and our own authentic and integrated conception of who we are, the role we play, and what we do in life. And as some people have said to me who are my senior in age, they said, I'll let you know when I get there. So it's not to say, as with everything I preach, many things are easier to say than to do. That will be in the background and parenthetical of what I want to say today. So we have one of the beautiful blessings of this week's parasha. This blessing, this week contains blessing and curses. And it says, Baruch atah ba'ir uvaruch atah besadeh. May you be blessed in the city and blessed in your field. And many of our sages, I think from Rashi onward, talk about this becoming a blessing of authenticity, that our behavior within and our behavior without should, our comportment should be distinct, integrated, authentic, and integral. We should have integrity, to use the true definition of that word. And Simcha Bunim of Peshitta, writing about 200 years ago, talks about the, I don't know if it's a Hasidic conception, I think it's actually an Eastern European and perhaps just exclusively Eastern European Jewish conception, this idea of don't be a tzaddik in a fur coat, which goes back to the idea that when one feels cold in Eastern Europe, in Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, one could either start a fire or one could buy a nice coat. Difference being that a fire can warm others, but with that same money, if you just bought a nice coat, it only keeps you warm. And it says, Simcha Bunim, your goodness should influence your surroundings, both in the city and in the field. And that classic idea of how would we behave if no one could see us? Would our behavior be similar to the way it is when people look at us? Is our morality strictly based on perception and self-identity, or is it internal, deeply held? And what are the things in our life that mark us, that move us forward, that allow us to reach a state of consonance, a state without dissonance between external and internal, a state where we assume our role in a natural way, the way that Tina Kramer works on your neck, without confusion, without identity crises, without doubt, with assurance, the way a great computer programmer knows what to write next, the way a great lawyer knows what to say next in a brief. That it comes eventually, if not naturally, at least sedately. Some of the many things that push us along this road, the things that mark us in life, the things that move us forward, the images I want to give you are somewhat the way Michelangelo described making sculpture as a process of chipping away the stone. One of our congregants recently went to Carrara in Italy. I think more than a couple of you have been there, which is where the marble for Michelangelo and other sculpture would come from during the Renaissance. Just a strange sort of pilgrimage to see not the art, but the stone from which it were made, the raw material. So one of the images we get is this cairn, not exactly a cairn, but a roadside marker that the people assemble. They put stones together as one would a cairn on a path and plaster over it. And as they do it, they mark the stones. And at that moment, says Torah, V'daber Moshe b'kohanim v'alevim v'el kol Yisrael lemor hasket shmo Yisrael. Listen, people of Israel. Hayom hazeh nieta la'am l'adonai Elohecha. Today is the day you become a people to God, your God, that you become revered, that you reach covenant 40 years after that time in the wilderness as they make those plastered markers to enter into the land, to set boundaries, to set pathways. That's their arrival as a people. It's been said of America, for example, that we're not a people joined by a common ethnicity nor necessarily by a common language, but by a common understanding and rule of law, a common covenant to Constitution. That's what Samson Raphael Hirsch, the proto-Orthodox rabbi of the 19th century, notes about this, that the Jewish people are unique among the people of the world. He notices the same thing. Their nationhood was not formed by their own land, their own language, their own culture, although we are, as Kaplan would say, a civilization, true. But we were formed on the day of that covenant when we pledged to uphold the Torah. And there were no signs in the desert to mark them as a people because we were founded on Torah and mitzvot, which I think are the things that imprint upon us, that drive us, that chip us, that unnerve us even, to reach states of identity, to come into our own. That study, Torah as a metaphor for instruction, Torah literally being instruction, Torah as the essence of study and wisdom and acquisition of knowledge and practice, becomes the thing that helps us to become our greatest self. These are consistent in metaphors about our sages, one of the greatest, I think, being about Akiva, who saw the rope along a well that would lead to the bucket, and he saw that the stone was worn by the water and the rope, not immediately, but over time there were grooves cut in, and the way water cuts grooves through the land to make a river. That was the metaphor he took away as Torah, that the slow and steady accumulation of wisdom, as I mentioned last week, that sermons are cumulative, that Torah and knowledge and Beit Midrash are cumulative processes. It's not one thing we learn. Our tradition is much more than one verse. It's the slow and steady acquisition, not only of wisdom, but of reflection, of many verses, of a life view. We're described towards the end of this week's reading, HaTorah HaZot, this teaching that God is entrusting us, that God, through which God will give us blessing and curse. And the Talmud says, from Rabbi Ishmael, that if a repulsive wretch were to meet you, drag him to the Beit Midrash, take him to the study hall. If he is of stone, he will dissolve, and if of iron, he will shiver into fragments. A great image for the high holidays, when we talk about having the broken heart. Broken heart doesn't imply in our tradition that someone left you, that you broke up with your girlfriend or boyfriend. But a broken heart is a high state. A broken heart is the best state, a state of openness, a state of transformation, a state of circumcised heart is another phrase they use. State of vulnerability and awareness and the possibility of new information coming in. And that's what they're saying. You can arrive at that either by the steady erosion of time or maybe the epiphany, the difficulty, the challenge that causes you to shatter and be reformed. And through all that, that's how you chip away at the external, the parts of you that don't match. And again, not in 1 week, not in 1 year, as some have told me, maybe not even in a lifetime. But we eventually approximate the person we want to be. We fake it till you make it, you know? And suddenly we become experts in our field. Maybe we don't feel like experts in our field. Maybe we're always shocked that people give us honor or dignity, that we still know ourselves to be the 11-year-old child who was not capable of such things. But it's not easy. It requires constant application, both of water and the chisel, both images, the slow and steady and the decisive and difficult. So Maimonides, party pooper that he is, goes into this concept, the Torah Hazot. I really do think, yeah, I wouldn't want to hang out with him. He would not have been he might have been a good friend. He would tell you when you're being an idiot, but he might tell you that every day. And, you know, he was maybe a workaholic. We don't know much about his home life, and we only know reports of how he spent his day. Those could be deceptive. But he does say in the Mishnah Torah regarding HaTorah Hazot, it's a commandment to study during the day and night. I love this. But you don't learn the majority of the wisdom. You only learn the majority of your wisdom at night. I don't know where he gets this. There's certain Kabbalah that he wouldn't have been alert to that postdated him, that says that the night is a very auspicious time. I don't know if that's what he's getting at, or maybe just that it's good to be in the office when things are quiet. But if you want a merit to wear the crown of Torah, you should be careful with your nights and not lose even one of them in sleep or eating or drinking or conversation or anything similar to them. Only the study of Torah and matters of wisdom. Yeah, really good at parties. I really think he would be a lot of fun. He'd bring his book to a party, wouldn't eat or drink or talk to anyone. I don't know. I find it unlikely that he was as severe and austere as we understand him to be or read him to be. But maybe. I think the essential point is that it requires a lot of application to become our best selves, to become our true selves, to start feeling as if we are not dressed in borrowed robes, that it takes day after day and persistence and weeks and months and years to have enough knowledge and wisdom and self-assuredness to reach a place where we don't feel like a fraud as an attorney or a doctor or a teacher, that it feels true. You know, and every now and then you have a moment where people ask you a question and you know the answer and it doesn't feel like you're just making it up on the spot. You know? I doubt that ever happens as a parent. That always seems to be a constant game of improvisation and trying to catch up with your children. But maybe in career, you get those moments where you feel like, this is truly who I am. This is truly what I deserve to be doing. I truly understand this tour I'm giving. I truly understand this artwork that I'm presenting. It is truly me. It is not someone else wearing a costume. But truly, it takes a long time. So we're told, again, I think just to kind of close where I started, that it's only after these 40 years that the people really, truly become part of the covenant. And God says, Moses says, rather, that up till this point, God had not given us a heart to know, eyes to see, nor ears to hear until today. It took a long time to be aware, to perceive, to conceive. That sort of pregnant period of 40 years in the wilderness, or 7 years between agricultural cycles, or 50 years between Jubilee cycles, those are necessary periods of fermentation. So the Talmud says to us, in the mouth of Rava, from this you learn that it may take one 40 years to know the mind of one's master. In the case of the people of Israel, it was 40 years to understand God, but in the case of us, the people we revered in medical school or in our graduate programs who seemed unapproachable and unattainable in their wisdom, our heroes and idols and mentors, and we thought we could never be like them. Maybe after 40 years, we could be as great as our Zadie, as caring as our mother, as wise as our rabbi, not me, but other rabbis. And maybe we'll attain. Give it time. And then, slowly and steadily, it catches up with you, your true self. Slowly and steadily, you are the person you pretended to be. And the imposter, maybe not till years after you die, maybe before you die, but God willing, sometime in this world, the person you dreamed of being will catch up with you. Sforno, the Italian sage, said something that I want to leave you with today. Of course, this parsha has blessing and curse. And one of the blessings is that these blessings will catch up to you. They'll catch up to you and arrive at you. And Sforno says, they will catch up with you even though you didn't make an effort to catch up with them. Maybe one day, slowly in the future, we will live into the person we imagine ourselves to be.